Just to let you guys know a little something here, we've got someone coming up to preach today. This is their first time ever preaching. And you would think after living 97 years on this planet, he would he would have already done that by this point, but it hasn't happened yet. So you guys get to enjoy the first ever sermon by Dave Birdwhistle. So why don't we give him a big hand as he comes on up here.
Thanks, I think. Good morning, Catalyst. Yeah, you ruined my intro. I was going to say, everybody's wondering, hey, communion's over, offering's over, welcome's over. What's he doing up here? I'm going to answer that in two questions. First one's an easy one. How many of you knew or have heard the name Wayne Smith? Come on, raise your hands. That's about everybody. And then besides being this is the day when we get to come and worship the Lord, there's something else going on today. What's that? Super Bowl. Super Bowl. I know. But I'm still for him. Okay, Wayne Smith's favorite message and his most requested message he did every Super Bowl Sunday called Playing Hurt. And Dave was kind enough and gracious enough to allow me to share that message with you today. So, in the words of Wayne Smith, in honor of Wayne Smith, I give you Playing Hurt. The greatest thrill, the greatest dream, the greatest goal of a football player's career is to play in the Super Bowl. To be able to wear the ring of the Super Bowl champion is the greatest accomplishment of all. I'm told that running with a football in an NFL game and being tackled is somewhat like running into a brick wall. In spite of their unbelievable conditioning, nearly all of these players play hurt. The question begs to be asked, why do these fellows do this? Some do it because of money. In tonight's Super Bowl, the winners will get $97,000 apiece. Losers will get $43,000. But for most of them, football is in their blood and they love it. They interviewed a former NFL player on television who's now in a wheelchair. He played 383 games, had 40 surgeries, 30 on his knees, 3 on his back, played with 5 rods in his back. No one retires from the NFL in one piece. The reporter asked him, "Would you do it again?" He replied without hesitation, "Absolutely." The Lexington Herald Leader in August of 1966 said this about the Super Bowl. Athletes are willing to sacrifice body parts, though there are pills and needles biting their lips, the throbbing pain becomes unbearable. Their job is to play regardless. The bottom line is they play hurt or they don't play. The late Tommy Bell was a well-known Lexington lawyer as well as a National Football League referee for the 15 years. He told how Joe Namath, when his team won the Super Bowl, shouldn't even been on the field. His knees were heavily wrapped, and he was in terrible shape. A side note to that, I wish he hadn't have played, because he beat my Colts. Tommy Bell liked to tell the time when he played football for Henry Clay High School in Lexington, and he took himself out of the game. The coach said, "Bell, why did you come out of the game?" Bell said, "I think my leg's broke." Coach said, "Well, get back in there until you're sure it's broken." One of Tommy's favorite stories about a Super Bowl game was one in which the Kansas City Chiefs were playing. They had a big, huge tight end named Fred Arbanis, and he collided head-on with another player. One of his eyes popped out. Not until that moment did millions of people watching on television know that Fred Arbanis had an artificial eye. It was easy to find. They found it, called the water boy, threw that eye in a bucket, sloshed it around, popped it back in, and he's ready to go back out. Tommy Bell, who's the short guy, looked up at Fred, and he says, "Fred, I don't believe this. I mean, you got one eye. Your livelihood, your security, your profession, your future, everything depends on your eyesight. You've already lost one of your eyes. What would you do if you lost the other one?" Fred looked at him and says, "I'd just become an official like you, Mr. Bell." So many people today are called to play hurt. There's widespread discouragement today because so many people are discouraged with their teams, their jobs, their marriages, and the direction in their lives. It's just as easy to be discouraged in the ministry. 1,300 ministers leave every month in America. In the last 25 years, the divorce rate for pastors across the country has risen 65%. The average length of ministry in the Christian church is less than 3 years. For every 10 ministers that begin the ministry, only one retires from the ministry. The message is simple, and it all boils down to this. Whether you're on a football field, in the kitchen, in the office, you're going to be hurt. All of us have hurt in our lives. We either have problems, are having problems, or will have problems. The Bible tells us suffering is inevitable. Everyone has losses and heartaches. Job 14:1 says, "Man that is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." The only way to avoid troubles in life is to die. Have you ever been depressed or misunderstood? You ever had your feelings hurt? You ever been offended? Have you ever been victimized by jealousy? Ever had a lot of illness? What about loneliness? Discouragement? Maybe your children are not what you hoped they'd be. Maybe your marriage isn't what you hoped it would be. What does the Bible say? Simply and directly, it says, stay in the game. Luke 9:62 says, "The man who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not fit for the kingdom of God." "He that endures to the end, and the same shall be saved," in Matthew 10:22. 1 Corinthians 15:58, "Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." Look at the life of Jesus. God had one son without sin, but he had no son without sorrow. The question is, will you stay in the game? That's my proposition to you today. Are you going to stay in the game? 2 Corinthians 4:1-9 says, "Therefore, seeing we have this ministry, as we have received mercy, we faint not. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, not forsaken. Cast down, not destroyed." What was Paul saying? I'm down, but I'm not out. Recently, a young minister was discouraged because he had problems with his church board. He was assured that what was going on was the norm, not the exception. Sad, but true. A poet wrote, My father's way may twist and turn, my heart may throb and ache, but in my soul I'm glad to know he maketh no mistake." In Romans 8, Paul lists some of the things that can take us out of the game: tribulation, stress, persecution, nakedness, peril, and sword. But then in verse 28, "All things work together for good to them that love the Lord." Repeat that with me. "All things work together for good to them that love the Lord." If I didn't believe that, I'd be done. "Some things have been hard," he says. "All things." Yes, even bad things work together for good to them that love God. If you're in the middle of the forest, it's hard to figure out how all those trees are going to help you. When you're in the middle of a hard time, you can say, "I can't trace to God, but I can trust God." And that's when he says, "Put it on me. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Matthew 11:28. There are three things to remember when you're playing the game. Number one, you must learn to play when you're hurt physically. The Apostle Paul did. 5 times, he said, "I was beaten. 3 times I was beaten with a rod. Once I was stoned. 3 times I'd been shipwrecked. I've been weary, hungry, and cold." And then he says, "I was given a thorn in my flesh, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities." That's 2 Corinthians 11. In layman's terms, he said, "I take pleasure in being hurt." Can you believe that? Then he concludes, in reproaches, persecution, and stress for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am made strong. 2 Corinthians 12. Lou Gehrig played first base for the New York Yankees for 15 years. He was called the Iron Man of baseball. I could tell you about his home runs that he hit in 7 World Series, but the thing to remember about Lou Gehrig, he played 2,130 games without missing one. Do the math. 154 games, that's almost 14 straight seasons without missing a game. When he retired, they x-rayed his hands. Every finger had been broken once, some twice, some even 3 times. But he never missed a game. What did he do? He played when he was hurt. Many sports writers believe the greatest football team ever to play was from Sewanee, Tennessee in 1899. It's now called College of the South. Back then, they didn't have planes and trains to travel on. Regardless, this team played 5 games in 6 days. They didn't play on Sundays back then, so they got a day off, the slackers. They played Texas A&M, Tulane, LSU, and Mississippi, and all on the road. Tennessee, and all they had was 14 players and a barrel of Tennessee Mountain spring water. Whatever that was, we need to get some. We know what they make in those Tennessee mountains, don't we? All 14 members of this team played both offense and defense. You don't see that anymore. And remember, 5 games in 6 days. They played Texas, won 12-0. The next day, Texas A&M, 10-0. The next day, they beat Tulane, 23-0. They took off Monday, LSU, 34-0. And Tuesday, they beat Mississippi, 12-0. That's right. Not a team scored on them in those 6 days. They had to be bruised, broken, and bloody, but they played hurt. The most lopsided score in the history of football was in 1916 when Georgia Tech played Cumberland College in Cumberland, Tennessee. The final score, 222-0. Yep. Zip, zilch, zero, nada. Nothing. People said the Georgia Tech players were big animals compared to the small Cumberland College players. One time during the game, the Cumberland quarterback fumbled the ball and it went over towards one of his teammates. He yelled, "Pick it up." The guy yelled back at him, "You pick it up. You dropped it." Small sidebar to this story. John Heisman was the coach for Georgia Tech when they played Cumberland. The Heisman Trophy is awarded every year to the college football player that's voted the best in the nation, and it's named after Coach John Heisman. He had a reputation first as a player, then as a coach, as a fierce competitor. He never quit, and he didn't let his players quit. At halftime of that game, they were leading 126-0. He told his team, "Men, we're in front, but you never know what those Cumberland players might have up their sleeves. Don't let up." Several years ago, a Birmingham, Alabama newspaper had a headline in the sports page that read, "The most exciting moment of my life." It showed a picture of Jack Nicklaus, one of the 2 or 3 greatest golfers of all time, writing out a check for $5,000 to charity. As a matter of fact, it was his second $5,000 check that day. He makes the headline, "The most exciting moment of my life," and it was a game he lost. Let me share with you the background. A man by the name of Charlie Boswell lived in Birmingham, Alabama. In 1937, he was captain of Alabama's Rose Bowl football team. In World War II, he was captain again, but this time in the infantry. He stepped on a landmine and blew his eyes out. Yep, he was stone cold blind. But for 9 holes of golf, he could shoot par. He hits a ball he can't even see. The caddy rattles the cup so he knows where to hit. And they ask him, "How do you do that?" He said, "I keep mental pictures in my mind." Well, Jack Nicklaus went to Birmingham to help raise money for the boys' ranch, and he gave a $5,000 check. They had a banquet to honor the great Nicklaus. for helping with the fundraiser and for giving $5,000 to the cause. Halfway through the meal, Charlie Boswell stood up in the back of the room and said, Mr. Nicholas, they tell me you play a little golf. Complete silence. Yes, Nicholas said, I've been known to play a round or two. So do I, said Charlie, and I think I can beat you. I'll play you 9 holes of golf. If you beat me, I'll give $5,000 to the boys' ranch. And if I beat you, you give another $5,000. And to make it fun, exciting, and fair, I'm going to let you pick the course we play on. I'll choose the time we play, day or night. Guess when Charlie chose to play. The headline said, the most exciting moment of my life. Someone asked the Golden Bear about that statement. Why would you call this the most exciting moment of your life? You've won every trophy, award, honor, and accolade your sport can offer. Why would this be so exciting? He said, because I met a man who refuses to let fear control his life. The only cure for fear is faith. Faith in yourself and your teammates produces power. Don't give yourself over to any defeat. Even when you come out of the locker room for the second half, come out with energy. Those who believe win momentum. Don't come out looking like you've been chosen the cruise director for the Titanic. There's only one hospital in the continental United States that offers care for sufferers of Hansen's disease. That hospital is located in Carville, Louisiana. Anybody know what Hansen's disease is? Leprosy. One day, a visitor was shown around the hospital by the chaplain. He was introduced to a lady who had lost a leg and whose face was marred and scarred by the disease. The visitor asked, what her favorite song was when he found out that she sang in the hospital choir. She thought for a moment, her face brightened, and out of that disfigured mouth came this melody. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. Folks, that's power. Second thing you need to remember, you need to play when you're hurt emotionally. Our Lord must have been hurt emotionally. At the first Sunday school picnic, our Lord fed 5,000 from 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Then he said, I want someone to preach. There was only 500 left. Then he said, I want someone to pray, down to 120. Then he said, I want someone to witness. He only had 70 left. Then he said, I want some disciples. He got 12. Then he said, I want someone to pray all night with me. Now he only had 3. And on the cross, only one of those stood there alone with him. Jesus spent 3 years with his disciples. They saw every miracle. He stopped a funeral and raised a boy from the dead. He opened the eyes of the blind. 3 long years, they ate with him, slept with him, and most of them left him. I'm sure he was hurting emotionally, but he played on. You play when you're on the mountaintop. You must play when you're in the valley, too. Inventor Charles Kettering said, failures, repeated failures, are finger points on the road to achievement. The only time you don't fail is the last time you try something and it works. One fails forward toward success. Thomas Edison took him 1,000 tries to create the light bulb. When they gave him a hard time, he says, hey, I succeeded in finding 1,000 things that didn't work. Henry Ford went bankrupt in his first year in the automobile industry. 2 years later, his business failed. The third one, the Ford Motor Company, has done fairly well. In 2009, it was the only company not asking for a federal tax handout. 23 publishers rejected a children's book written by someone who called himself Dr. Seuss. The 24th contract published it, and his first book sold 6 million copies. Don Fightmaster lost an arm in a car accident as a young man, but he was determined to excel at golf. He became the National Disabilities Champion and in recent years was inducted into the Kentucky Golf Association Hall of Fame. When he accepted the honor, through tears, he quoted the disability's motto, "It's not what I do, what I've lost that counts. It's what I do with what I have left that matters." The Bible tells us in Galatians and 2 Thessalonians not to grow weary in well-doing. Why did Paul say that? Because he knew we would. On New Year's Day, 1919, Georgia Tech played the University of California in the Rose Bowl. Shortly before halftime, a player named Roy Riggles recovered a fumble for California. In all the mass of people, he got confused and he started running 65 yards in the wrong direction. A teammate tackled him just before he scored for the opposite team. When California attempted to punt, Georgia blocked the kick and scored a safety. The team headed off the field for halftime and ran into the dressing room. As they sat on their benches, Riggles put a blanket over his head and cried like a baby. California coach Price was silent. No doubt he was trying to decide what to do with Riggles. Everyone just sat there. When the timekeeper announced 3 minutes till playing time, Coach Price looked at the team and said simply, "Men, same team that played the first half will start the second." All the players got up and started out, all except Roy Riggles. Coach called him again and he didn't move. So went over to Riggles and said, "Roy, didn't you hear me? The same team starts the second half." Riggles looked up, tears in his eyes, and said, "Coach, I can't do it. I've ruined you. I've ruined my school. I've ruined myself. I couldn't go back out there and face that crowd if my life depended on it." Coach Price reached over, put his hand on Riggles' shoulder, and said, "Roy, get up and go back out there. The game is only half over." Roy Riggles went back out, and everyone who saw that famous game said it was one of the greatest halves of football a player ever had. The point of this story for us is quite simple. Keep going. Failure's never final. You make a mistake, you commit a turnover, you miss an easy tackle, you get called for a penalty that's a bad call. Keep going. The best is yet to come. The thing I like about those playing hurt is that you have heart. You've been playing the best you can, giving it everything you have. Sometimes you've come up short, but there isn't a person that's seen you play that can't say you did your best, and then some. Third thing to remember about playing hurt is that your faithfulness to the game will be measured by the depth of your love. Why do people hang on? They hang on because they are committed and surrendered to a cause that they love. How much do you love what you're doing? That's how long you're going to stay in the game. When your best friend hurts you or turns on you, you may be tempted to quit. But if you're in love with the Lord, what will you do? You hang in there. U.S. News and World Report several years ago told about a little girl, 7 or 8 years old, very thin, who pulled her 180-pound father out of a swimming pool and saved his life. When they asked her, "How did you do that?" "Oh," she said, "it was easy. I love my daddy." You see, when you love, when you're really in the depths of love, you'll do things that others won't or can't do. And when you have that kind of love, your potential is unbelievable. If you've lost several games or have lost your desire defeat after defeat, you need to remember, keep hanging on. Yep, we live in horse country. There was a horse by the name of Broker's Tip who raced 13 times, lost every one of them. He ran a 14th race. He won that one, the 1933 Kentucky Derby. Then there was jockey Dom Brumfield, who talked about his horse, Quai King, after winning the Derby in 1966. He was asked, "How do you win the Derby?" He said, "You've got to motivate the horse." And they said, "Then how do you do that?" He said, well, we're coming down the stretch. I lean over to him and say, roses are red, violets are blue. Horses that lose are made into glue. Two motivators in life, love and fear. When people love each other and love what they're doing, they can do remarkable things. I love horse pulls. Oh, Wayne did. They fascinate me. I remember the count of one horse pull in which one horse pulled 8,000 pounds, another 9,000 pounds. They thought, what can they do if we put them together? 8, 9, 17. Nah. They amazed everyone. They pulled 28,000 pounds together. A principle called synergy. Two together are greater than separate parts. Many teams know there's an acrostic for the word team. Together, everyone achieves more. Say that with me. Together, everyone achieves more. Years ago, General Dwight D. Eisenhower sat at a conference table staring into some of the most intense faces that had ever been seen. He had just unfolded the plans for the invasion of Normandy. If they succeeded, the Allied forces would win the war. If they failed, Hitler would, for all practical purposes, rule the world. Eisenhower scanned the room, noting the diversity of the group. So many strong leaders, so many different opinions, so many large egos. But he broke the silence with these words, "Men, it's one team or we lose." Always remember, it's one team, men, or we lose. When you're in the long haul and your motive is love, your possibilities are amazing. The key is not to quit. I don't much care what people say, and I don't much care what people think. Whatever I do care is what God thinks and what He says. For sure, I don't want God to someday say to me, "You quit on me." It always bothers me when people say, "Well, you know, there are things I don't like about the ministry or the Christian life, being an elder, being a deacon." It has nothing to do with it. It's all about duty. I do a lot of things in life, not because I enjoy it, but because it's my duty. I want to give my utmost to do my best at any cost for the cause to which I've committed a lifetime doing. A poet ends a stanza in a poem he wrote, "Those that love God most are at their post when the crowds have gone away." Salvation's free, but it's not cheap. We're not saved by works, we're saved for works. And God wants you in the game, and it's only love of God that will keep you in the game until you cross that finish line. 1 Peter 4:12 says, "Dear friends, do not be surprised about painful trials you're suffering. Don't be surprised as though some strange thing is happening to you. Don't act like, 'Gee, I didn't know that illness would come,' or 'I didn't know someone would offend me,' or 'Someone in my church would disappoint me.'" Peter said, "Rejoice that you could participate in the suffering of Christ. He suffered. The servant is no better than his master." James 1:2 says, "When you face trials, not if." Oddly enough, one of the best basketball shooters in history was never on a team. Winfred Hetzel of Melrose, Minnesota, never played college or pro ball, but he toured the nation for years shooting basketball exhibitions. He'd shoot with his eyes closed, he'd sit on the floor with his back to the basket, and throw the ball backward over his head and hit it every time. He didn't play on a team, but he loved the game, and he practiced, and he practiced. John Pierce, a brother in the Lord that now lives in Harrison County, town of Cynthiana, was a kicker for the University of Kentucky. While at UK, he broke every field goal record the university had. When he broke the last one, I brought him up in front of the church for one of my famous impromptu interviews. "How do you do it, John?" He said, "This week in practice, I kicked 3,000 balls." Bill Bradley was the star of the U.S. Olympic basketball team in 1964. He was one of the greatest players that ever put on a uniform. Someone said to him, "I wish I could shoot like you." Bradley said, "You could if you stay in one place until you hit 24 consecutive baskets." I think a certain team around here needs to start doing that. I want to ask the band to come on back up now. There are 26 letters in the alphabet arranged in 800,000 words. Books, magazines, newspapers, and documents all start with 26 letters. There are seven basic notes, and the piano has 88 keys. Yet by arranging these seven notes, musicians can arrange anything from melodies to opera to heavy metal. There are only 10 numbers, 0 through 9, yet they are the backbone of mathematics. There are only three primary colors, red, yellow, and blue, yet they are blended into a variety of endless tints and shades. The point is, God never did give us a whole lot to work with. But what a difference we can make by using what we have. Talents are few, but remember, Shakespeare only had 26 letters. Beethoven had seven notes. Rembrandt had three colors. Einstein had 10 numbers. Elmer Towns, a great Christian leader, put out a list several years ago of the 100 largest churches in America. 33 ministers, one-third of them, didn't have an education beyond high school. In a book, The Very, Very Rich and How They Made It, gives an account of those Americans that are worth at least $500 million. One of the three things they had in common, an average of an eighth grade education. You have a talent too. You display it every week on the court of endeavor, whether it's in life, on the athletic court, or the playing field, and you do it with finesse. When you do the very best you can, you win. It doesn't matter if you score a single point. It doesn't matter if you win a single game. God has given you a great ability. I give him the glory for you and what you do. You all are a joy to watch. You're an even greater joy to know. Never forget, it's not the number of times you're knocked down that matters. It's the number of times you get back up that counts. Now get out there and play. Hurt.